This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
What happens when you combine record-breaking AI funding, walking robotic dogs flagged by the Pentagon, and a historic 23% tech stock market plunge?
Total chaos, honestly.
Right, total chaos for global tech markets. So today we are cutting through that noise. We are opening up a massive intelligence briefing on China's AI, robotics, semiconductor, and telecom sectors.
There's a lot to cover.
It is. We are zeroing in on the tectonic shifts that are just reshaping the global economy. And this deep dive is based on a really comprehensive report and commentary provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker.
Which is incredibly detailed, by the way.
Yeah, we are extracting the absolute most critical insights from this mountain of data so you can see exactly where the global tech landscape is heading next.
But before we get into the actual mechanics of this briefing, I think we need to establish a very clear baseline.
Go for it.
So the contents of this report touch on some of the most intense, high-stakes geopolitical and trade tensions on the planet, specifically between the U.S., China, and allied nations. And I just want to be explicitly clear to you listening. We are impartially reporting the contents of these sources.
Right. No sides being taken here.
Exactly. We're not taking any political sides, nor are we endorsing the viewpoints found in the material. Our objective is strictly to explore the factual data and the strategic ideas provided in this briefing. That way you can understand the underlying forces at play.
Perfectly said. So the overarching narrative we are tracking today is this massive, aggressive transition. I mean, the Chinese tech industry is decisively moving out of the research lab and just throwing its entire weight into the global capital markets.
This is a massive shift.
Yeah, it's a play for absolute commercial dominance. And the ripple effects, they are already hitting every layer of the global supply chain. I figure the best place to start is at the software and funding layer. Because the sheer velocity of the capital flowing into Chinese AI right now is staggering.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, take DeepSeek, for example.
Yeah, DeepSeek is, they are the perfect bellwether for this transition. They just closed their first ever external funding round, and the numbers are just record-breaking.
I saw that. It's wild.
Right. We're looking at a 51 billion RMB injection, which is roughly 7.4 billion U.S. dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And that pushes their valuation to 400 billion RMB.
Wow.
But honestly, the capitalization table tells a story of its own. I mean, Tencent contributed roughly 10 billion RMB, which, you know, makes sense from a cloud and software synergy perspective.
Yeah.
But then CATL, the world's largest battery manufacturer, put in 5 billion.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because a battery giant funding a frontier AI lab is not a traditional tech investment.
Not at all.
It points directly to the ultimate bottleneck in AI scaling, which is power generation. Like, if you want to train the next generation of massive models, your primary constraint isn't just getting enough GPUs anymore.
Right, you need the juice.
Exactly. It's securing the physical energy grid capacity to run those GPUs.
Mm-hmm.
Having CATL on the cap table suggests DeepSeek is anticipating and actively solving for the physical energy limitations that are currently bottlenecking Western AI development.
Yeah, they are looking way ahead. And they are already in talks for a second round to bump that valuation up another 37%.
Mm.
They are actively eyeing a 2027 IPO.
That is moving so fast.
It is. But this massive war chest is really only half the strategy. It is what they're doing to the market with that capital that is truly disruptive.
Right. The pricing.
Yeah. They're weaponizing their unit economics.
Mm-hmm.
At the exact same time they're raising these billions, API prices in China are basically falling off a cliff.
It's crazy.
DeepSeek launched their V4 model, and they are pricing API access at 157th the cost of Anthropic's Fable 5.
157th.
Yeah. We are talking about frontier level intelligence priced at a fraction of a cent. And Moonshot AI just followed suit by releasing Kimi K3. This is a 2.8 trillion parameter model.
Which is massive.
It makes it the world's largest open weight model. And they are taking those weights public on July 27th, which fundamentally alters the competitive landscape.
But I have to push back on this pricing dynamic a bit. I mean, isn't this drastically low API pricing a massive trap for global tech startups?
What do you mean?
Well, think about it from the perspective of an enterprise architect, right? If you build your entire application layer reliant on a Chinese API simply because it costs 157th of the US alternative, you have optimized your burn rate beautifully in the short term.
Oh, sure. It looks great on paper.
Right. But what happens when the geopolitical pendulum swings? If a US-led trade restriction suddenly cuts off your API access, or if network throttling separates you from those servers, your entire product goes dark. Like, you are completely paralyzed by your own cost-saving strategy.
What's fascinating here is how lawyer Kunjin Kim interprets this exact market behavior. He argues that this pricing strategy and this massive fundraising completely flip the historical script.
Okay, how so?
Well, for years, the assumption was that top Chinese AI firms would remain insulated, you know, focusing on R&D and internal state project rather than global commercialization.
Right, keeping it in-house.
Exactly. But by slashing prices and open sourcing massive models like Kimi K3, they're basically racing U.S. titans toward global market capture before potential regulations can lock them out. They are creating facts on the ground.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, by embedding their architecture into the global open source developer ecosystem, pulling them out later becomes technically and economically agonizing for the developers who rely on them.
It is the ultimate vendor lock-in disguised as open access. You just flood the developer ecosystem with high-quality, practically free compute. And once startups abandon their expensive U.S. alternatives and wire their product to your infrastructure, you own the standard.
You've got them.
But, you know, offering API access at 157th of price is impossible if you are paying standard Western hardware premiums. To make those unit economics actually function, you have to control the physical infrastructure beneath the software.
Which brings us to Huawei.
Exactly. Huawei's recent moves at the World AI Conference, or WAIC, show they are doing exactly that.
Yeah, Huawei unveiled the Physical Atlas 950 SuperPod at WAIC. And this is a massive leap forward for non-Western infrastructure.
Tell me about the specs on this thing.
Well, it is a dedicated cluster using 1/324 Ascend chips housed across 16 cabinets.
Mm-hmm.
But the performance metric they highlighted is what's key. It hits one EFLOP PS at FP8 precision.
Okay, for the folks listening, why does FP8 matter so much here?
So operating at FP8 means they are optimizing strictly for the lower resolution math that AI inference actually relies on. You really don't need decimal level perfection to generate text or route logic. What you need is raw throughput.
Right, speed over pinpoint accuracy.
Exactly. That one EFLOP S of FP8 performance allows them to process massive workloads with just incredible efficiency.
And the economic metrics of the Atlas 950 are what make that 157th API pricing possible in the first place. I mean, the briefing indicates this cluster costs roughly a quarter of NVIDIA's H20 chip setup. But it runs 2.87 times faster for these specific inference workloads.
Like a huge advantage.
DeepSeek even confirmed they are running their production models at full scale on these Ascend clusters, which proves that the Huawei stack can handle frontier-level AI entirely independent of the NVIDIA ecosystem.
Completely standalone.
Yeah. And crucially, Huawei is sticking to their schedule to deploy these clusters in Korea in the fourth quarter. They are actively exporting the infrastructure. But, you know, the disruption isn't just happening in the data centers. It is completely upending how the end consumer actually accesses AI.
Oh, absolutely. The structural shift in distribution is arguably the most powerful dynamic in the entire report. I mean, China's top three telecom companies, China Telecom, China Mobile, and China Unicom, they are bypassing the traditional software as a service model entirely.
This part blew my mind.
Right. Mm. They're commercializing AI token subscriptions, and they're layering them directly onto mobile phone bills. China Telecom, for instance, they just rolled out packages starting at just 9.9 RMB a month, which is roughly $1.40.
$1.40?
Yeah. They're transitioning from a data traffic economy to an intelligence token economy.
Which completely eliminates the customer acquisition cost. I mean, think about it like the early days of mobile phone plans. Remember when we used to buy minutes or megabytes of data?
Oh, yeah. Constantly checking your balance.
Exactly. Now, telecoms are treating AI computing power like a basic utility. You're just subscribing to your monthly bucket of intelligence. If you are an AI startup in the US or Europe, you have to spend millions on marketing just to get users to download your app, input a credit card, and commit to a $20 monthly subscription.
It's a huge barrier to entry.
But the Chinese telecoms already possess the billing infrastructure for over a billion existing mobile subscribers. They just tack on a $1 AI compute tier to a utility bill people are already paying. You don't buy the power plant, you just pay for the bandwidth you consume.
And it creates a distribution channel that standalone AI startups simply cannot compete with. Like, when you layer proprietary models like the telecom's own telechat directly alongside DeepSeek on the same network, you achieve immediate ubiquitous market penetration.
Overnight.
Yeah. But that massive scale, I mean, a billion people casually burning AI tokens on their phones every single day, that demands an astronomical increase in physical memory and compute.
Which brings us to the extreme volatility we are seeing in the semiconductor markets right now. Because while this AI boom sounds like a rising tide that should lift all boats, it is currently sending absolute shockwaves through global financial indices. Just look at the Korean KOSPI index.
Oh man, the KOSPI.
It entered a technical bear market in July, dropping a historic 23%.
Yeah, that is the largest monthly drop on record for the KOSPI. It was basically a perfect storm. You had macroeconomic anxieties, localized interest rate pressures, and a sudden, sharp skepticism regarding the sustainability of global AI infrastructure investments.
Everyone just got spooked.
Exactly. And this massive contraction heavily impacted foundational giants like Samsung and SK Hynix right before SK Hynix was scheduled to release its Q2 earnings. The market anxiety was entirely palpable.
And amidst that panic, rumors started flying that Samsung was going to pursue a U.S. ADR listing, basically seeking to list shares in the U.S. to raise emergency capital, which is similar to the highly successful ADR that SK Hynix recently executed, and that one surged 13% on its first day.
Right, but Samsung didn't do it.
No, Samsung officially denied those rumors. They cited their deep cash reserves, which are around 147 trillion won, and their desire to avoid the heavy disclosure requirements and potential litigation risks inherent in U.S. markets.
Makes sense for them.
But the contrast between this deep anxiety in the Korean market and the aggressive expansion in China is jarring. Because right as the KOSPI is plunging, China's CXMT, that's Changjin Memory Technologies, they are gearing up for a massive July 27 IPO on the STAR board.
And the scale of the CXMT IPO is a massive signal all on its own. I mean, they are aiming to raise up to $9.8 billion.
Almost $10 billion.
Yeah, which makes it the largest Chinese A-share semiconductor IPO in history. And the domestic appetite for it is just insatiable. The retail shares were oversubscribed by 212 times. We also know that Apple is currently testing CXMT's memory chips for devices designated for the Chinese market.
But I need you to clarify the mechanics of this threat for the listener, because when you look at the raw technology, CXMT is focused on older generation DDR4 and LPDDR5 memory.
Right, correct.
They are not currently producing the ultra-advanced HBM high-bandwidth memory that SK Hynix and Samsung dominate. And HBM is the crucial bottleneck for AI hardware. So why should we care about this specific CXMT IPO? Why does a legacy DRAM manufacturer raising $9.8 billion cause such an existential panic for the companies building the frontier AI chips?
Right. So if we connect this to the bigger picture, we hit lawyer Kyungjin Kim's central warning regarding the semiconductor ecosystem. Mm-hmm. You simply cannot evaluate the KOSPI plunge and the CXMT IPO in isolation. It all comes down to how semiconductor R&D is actually funded. Samsung and SK Hynix rely on the massive, consistent cash flow that's generated by selling standard general-purpose DRAM to ordinary server farms and consumer electronics manufacturers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that steady revenue is the foundational cash cow. That is what pays for the multi-billion-dollar fabrication plants required to stay ahead in the HBM race.
So if CXMT takes that $9.8 billion in IPO capital and uses it to massively scale their production capacity.
Exactly. They flood the global market with general-purpose DRAM, and that triggers a brutal, prolonged price war in the foundational memory segment.
Wow.
If the profit margins on DDR4 and LPDDR5 collapse due to oversupply, the Korean giants lose the very revenue streams funding their advanced research. It is essentially a strategic backdoor attack on their R&D budgets. If you destroy their cash cow, their ability to maintain their lead in the advanced AI memory sector is severely compromised.
It is a war of attrition at the very foundation of the supply chain.
It really is.
And this aggressive push to bypass Western bottlenecks and capture market share isn't just confined to data centers and stock tickers. It is manifesting in the physical world through robotics. Yeah. And the speed at which this hardware is being deployed globally is raising massive security alarms.
So, without a doubt. We are seeing this clearly with Unitree. They are a major player in robotics, producing the G1 robotic dogs and the G1 humanoid robots. On June 30th, the U.S. Pentagon officially designated Unitree as a Chinese military technology company, strictly banning direct contracts with them.
And this wasn't just like a bureaucratic trade dispute. Independent security researchers discovered what they termed a cloud sale backdoor embedded in the robot's firmware.
Yeah, this was bad.
During routine operation, these robots were actively beaming camera telemetry, audio recordings, and spatial mapping data directly back to Chinese servers.
The presence of hard-coded data exfiltration in autonomous hardware that maps physical spaces, I mean, that is a worst-case scenario for corporate and national security. Yet despite this severe red flag from the Pentagon, Unitree's momentum hasn't slowed in the slightest. They are pushing forward with a massive IPO in Shanghai, and they are aggressively scaling their export operations, specifically targeting the European market.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the market data shows the strategy is working flawlessly. Overall, China's global robot exports hit 19.9 billion RMB in just the first 5 months of the year, penetrating 150 different countries.
That's a huge footprint.
Right. I look at this and I immediately see the playbook for Huawei 5G network equipment or the early rollout of heavily subsidized budget smartphones. Like, the strategy is to move so fast that you entirely bypass permission. You just flood the global logistics chains, warehouses, and factory floors with cheap, highly capable hardware.
Exactly.
You build deep economic dependency first, and by the time a regulatory body fully comprehends the data security implications and attempts to draft a ban, the domestic businesses rely on the hardware too heavily to rip it out without causing economic self-harm.
That historical parallel highlights the exact vulnerability lawyer Kingjin Kim points out in the briefing. The technology deployment cycle is vastly outpacing the legislative cycle.
Which happens every time.
Every time. In the U.S., bills designed to address autonomous security robots are currently stalled in Congress. He stresses that governments need proactive, definitive policies implemented immediately.
You can't just wait and see.
No, because when regulators wait to observe market adoption before acting, they corner themselves into two equally destructive outcomes. They are forced to either execute rushed, chaotic bans that severely disrupt domestic supply chains, or they reluctantly accept compromised hardware into their infrastructure, which hollows out public trust entirely.
And it creates a brutal environment for domestic innovation. If you look at South Korea, you have companies like Hyundai Robotics and Doosan Robotics trying to compete in this exact space. If governments do not establish rigid, enforceable standards regarding data sovereignty and transmission security right now, those domestic companies are forced into a race to the bottom.
They can't keep up.
Right. They have to compete on raw price against heavily subsidized, globally exported tech that isn't bound by the same security overhead.
And that constant friction over data security, hardware subsidies, and market dominance has finally hit a breaking point. It's culminating in a literal structural splitting of the global technology ecosystem.
Which brings us to the geopolitical AI divide, and arguably the most permanent shift outlined in the intelligence briefing. At the close of WAIC 2026, Chinese President Xi Jinping delivered his first ever keynote address at the conference. And the direct result of that keynote was the formal creation of WAIHO. That's the World AI Cooperation Organization.
This is a monumental development. Because WAIC is not a loose coalition or some temporary think tank. It is a formal, centralized organization headquartered in Shanghai, launching with 29 member nations.
That's nine.
Yes. And the roster includes major emerging markets like Russia, Brazil, Indonesia, and Pakistan. Notably, the major Western tech powers are entirely excluded. WAICO stands in direct, structural opposition to the U.S.-led PAXILICA initiative, which currently unites 35 allied nations.
It's a clear line in the sand.
We are watching the formalization of two competing, fundamentally incompatible technology blocks.
And they're backing up this new block with highly specific localized regulations. On July 15th, China rolled out its new AI agent regulations, adding a third tier to an already complex regulatory system governing generative AI models and digital avatars. So, what does this all mean?
It's a nightmare for developers, frankly.
Totally. If you look at this from the perspective of a developer, an enterprise CTO, or a nation caught in the middle of these two blocks, like countries in Southeast Asia or Europe, you are facing an impossible balancing act. You have nations actively procuring cheap Huawei server clusters to modernize their domestic infrastructure while simultaneously relying on advanced AI memory exports to US companies like Nvidia to balance their trade deficits. How long can any economy realistically straddle that divide before the underlying architecture forces a choice?
This raises an important question about the future of global software deployment. The dilemma lawyer Kungjin Kim highlights is that these two AI governance orders are not just politically opposed, they are technically incompatible.
Right, the code itself clashes.
Exactly. It goes far beyond supply chain embargoes or hardware tariffs. The fundamental software architecture required to operate legally is diverging. If a development team builds an AI system designed to comply strictly with the EU AI Act, which mandates rigorous data provenance, privacy controls, and transparent sourcing, that exact code base may inherently violate the mandates of the WAICO framework. WAIC might require specific localized data sovereignty or state-aligned moderation weights.
You can't just compile one version of your software and ship it globally anymore.
You really can't. To operate in both hemispheres, an enterprise might literally have to fork its code base, utilize entirely different hardware stacks, and rebuild the AI architecture from the ground up to satisfy the opposing regulatory logic.
That sounds incredibly expensive.
It is. An editorial in the People's Daily explicitly warned against the formation of an AI Iron Curtain, but from a structural and technical standpoint, that is exactly what the industry is building.
It is just staggering to visualize. We have covered an immense amount of ground today, tracking how a single industry is reshaping global economics. We explored how China's AI sector has transitioned from isolated research labs into a capital-raising juggernaut.
Leveraging all that funding from CTL and Tencent.
Exactly, to weaponize pricing and challenge Western models. And we dissected the mechanics of the looming memory chip price wars and how a flood of legacy DRAM could structurally cripple the R&D budgets of the world's leading advanced chipmakers.
A foundational cash cow.
Yeah. And finally, we examine how this aggressive momentum from autonomous robots exporting telemetry data to the formal creation of WAICO is physically splitting the globe into two distinct incompatible tech spheres.
The connective tissue running through all of these developments is velocity. The transition from technological breakthroughs to commercial dominance and financial weaponization is occurring far faster than traditional regulatory frameworks can process.
And helping you keep pace with that velocity is exactly what this deep dive is all about. We take a mountain of dense, often contradictory intelligence briefings and distill the absolute critical mechanisms driving the change so you can stay effortlessly well-informed in a market that just refuses to slow down.
Because the complexity of this divided ecosystem is only going to compound from here.
It absolutely is. And as we leave you today, I want to offer a final thought for you to mull over, building on this reality of a fractured tech ecosystem. As these two massive tech blocks drift further apart, hard-coding entirely different rules into their silicon and software, what happens to you, the everyday consumer?
It's a great question.
We are fast approaching a reality where simply crossing a physical border means your personal AI assistant, your digital devices, and the smart infrastructure of the city around you suddenly operate under completely alien logic, ethics, and laws. You won't just be dealing with a different currency or language, you will be stepping into an entirely different digital reality. In the beginning, we talked about how markets crave precision and clean lines. But as this tech iron curtain falls, the environment we are walking into is anything but clean. It is deeply complex, highly fragmented, and we are all going to have to learn how to navigate it. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
For more from the same network, follow Daily AI News from Seoul on Apple Podcasts.